Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. My guest today is doing more, in my opinion, than almost anyone out there I've seen in terms of being on the front lines on many different battles. We are fighting for freedom and truth and liberty. And he is Derek Brose. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thanks for having me back on, Mel. I appreciate it.
Oh, God. I've been following you a long time. And when I had you on, I was like, we have to have you back. This is part one of two, because he's doing so much that we really need to know about. First and foremost, I wanted you to tell a little bit about you and your background, and then we'll get into all the amazing things you're doing.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that. So for those who aren't familiar with my work, my name is Derek Brose. I'm based in Houston, Texas. I live between Texas and Mexico. I run a website called The Conscious Resistance Network at theconsciousresistance.com. And I'm a writer for The Last American Vagabond, where I write weekly articles. I've also produced a number of documentaries over the years that you can find at theconsciousresistance.com. Most currently, and I guess the biggest project, is called The Pyramid of Power, which is a 17-part documentary series looking at all the various pieces of the puzzle, the cabal, if you will, and really sticking to just the facts and the sources and what we can document and what we know, and trying to answer the question of who or what runs the world. And we've released 14 episodes of that so far. You can find that at thepyramidofpower.net. And I've just been fighting for my local community here in Houston, as well as just trying to fight against the so-called New World Order and for liberty, for privacy, for not just for those of us here, but for all of those coming after us. For the last 14 years, that's what I've dedicated my life to. And that's taken a lot of different forms, from activism in the early days, mainly was focused on protesting and marching and rallying and kind of the street stuff, which I'm still always down for whenever it's time. But it's evolved more and more to focusing on journalism and the documentaries and the books and public speaking, and just trying to use my voice and my mind to share what I learn and, share that through my channels and kind of just take people along for the journey. And so I've been involved in community activism and the journalism, traveling the world doing public speaking, most recently as a candidate for mayor of Houston. And really, whatever I do, whatever form, I also make music. It's always just about trying to uplift, to empower anybody who will pay attention, really.
Yeah, there's so many people out there that say, I'm just one person. What can I do? And I say, you should go check out Derek Brose, because he's one person and he's doing a lot of good. First and foremost, let's talk about your run for mayor. You were getting traction, things were going along, and then you started to see that there was a concerted effort to keep you off of the ballot. Then that happened, and now you are suing them. So if you could tell my audience a little bit about this journey and what happened with this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So I ran for mayor in 2019, mayor of Houston, and I decided to do it again this year, really on a platform of trying to expose corrupt. Like, our tagline was focusing on solutions, exposing corruption. So I really used the race as a way to get on local media, TV, radio, newspapers, et cetera, and to talk about issues that I think people like us and those listening care about. And in a way that's not going to be done if I'm not there. If I'm not there, then these topics, vaccines, et cetera, are not going to be brought up, Agenda 2030. So I decided to run to try to see if we could raise awareness, really with no actual hope of winning per se, but still running a real campaign and planning to run it all the way to the end. Tomorrow, as we're recording this on Tuesday, November 7th, is actually the election. So if I was still in it, this would be the crunch time here. And I knew that there was going to be some obstacles, even though, as I mentioned, I did run in 2019. But this year, it was clear there was going to be a bit more resistance. And plenty of other people have said, I think it's because we were growing, or part of my team. And I would like to believe that. I don't have the evidence for it, of course. But nonetheless, I do know that my campaign this time was being endorsed by the Harris County Libertarian Party, which is the biggest county in Texas, and had support from Texas Latino conservatives and some kind of left groups that were, with me on privacy and stuff like that. And we were showing up in the polls and really building a grassroots movement here. And especially in the face of other candidates who are raising millions of dollars, we're raising tens of thousands of dollars, but we have a real movement behind us. And so I'm starting to show up in TV. I'm starting to show up places, and we go file on the day one to be on the ballot, and our ballot application is rejected. The mayor of Houston, who I've confronted many times over the last 8 years, for his role in the 5G rollout here in Houston. His job has been to turn Houston into a smart city. Right. He sent a personal letter to my house rejecting my ballot application, and they basically have interpreted Texas election code to disqualify me because I'm 38 now, but when I was 20 years old, I was addicted to drugs and I did get arrested. I went to prison for a little while, did my time, paid my debt to society, as we like to say, and moved on and changed my life. And I've been doing all the things I shared about earlier. So here I am, though. Actually, I was just filling out some paperwork related to this lawsuit, and my arrest was actually November 16th, 2005. So almost to the date, like 19 years ago. And nonetheless, it's being used against me. And so the mayor disqualified me. And from that point, myself and my team, we knew we had 30 days to the deadline on August 21st to figure something out. So I started calling every organization I could think of that claims to care about felons' rights and helping people when they're in these situations. And talked to all kinds of lawyers and eventually found a lawyer who is now my attorney who's representing me. And we did everything we could down to the wire of the deadline. I mean, I had people calling the city, the city attorney and the mayor's office, emailing them. I had the other candidates for mayor sign a letter saying they didn't care if I was on the ballot. They were okay with me running. They thought I had a right to run. We had the local media reporting on it. And nonetheless, in the end, the mayor's office just chose to disqualify me. And so I'm not on the ballot anymore. And, my campaign kind of switched gears and we've been promoting other issues. But as far as my specific battle, I realized, okay, this wasn't the fight I came back to Houston for. I wanted to run for office, to be in the race all the way to the end, to be on the televised debates, to make sure that these issues got talked about. But I was also prepared for this potentiality. I knew that there might be some pushback and some people who were threatened by the movement we were building and that I might be pushed off. And I prepared my team for that. And so once I realized, okay, I have an opportunity now, though, if I want to sue the state of Texas, not just for myself in case I decided I ever want to run for office again or something like that, right, but for anybody in Texas who might be like me, somebody who made a mistake 15, 20, whatever years ago and changed their life and decides the best way for them to serve their community is to go run for town council or city council or something, and who might be prevented from doing so under the current system. And really, the way the Texas election code is written, it's written in a very vague, kind of ambiguous way. So this court has said felons can run for office. This court has said they can't. Obviously, the city attorney here interpreted it to say, no, he can't. But there's no clarity. And so what our lawsuit is doing, we're suing suing the city, saying that the city used an interpretation of Texas election code that actually violates not only the Texas Constitution, but the U.S. Constitution, because there are many court cases that show that the right to run for office is vested in the First Amendment right to freedom of speech, so my right to express myself, as well as freedom of association, other people's right to vote for me if they choose to. So those are our arguments we're making, and we've got a few others, but it has now been officially filed in court. We've got the Houston Chronicle and local media reporting on it, and I'm, as I said, filling out paperwork right now, but it's just begun. We expect this to take maybe a year or 2 years to go through the whole process.
It's a real worthy fight. And, you know, it's so funny. I think like our globalist billionaire oligarchy that runs the country are a bunch of mafia criminals. So it's really ironic that they would have a child who basically messed up with drugs 20 years ago and say, sorry, you can't run when we are run by some of the most corrupt criminals on planet Earth. You know, it's totally ironic. But on top of that, there was actually something that is not unique to Houston. And this is about the mayor and the power of the mayor there. And I think a lot of people do not know this, and it might be where they are too. And people really should look into the power of your mayor. If you could explain, because when I looked at your case and I've been watching it and everything, this seems personal from your mayor because you were actually going after his unlimited, shockingly unlimited power. So if you could just talk about that aspect of what is going on there, because there's got to be mayors all over this country that have this kind of situation, which is totally against, in my opinion, for the people, by the people.
Absolutely. So, when it comes to city governments in the U.S., now this may be different for those listening elsewhere, but you typically have one of two kinds of governments. You have, whether you have a town council or a city council, you have what's known as a weak or a strong form of government. And they're basically like they sound. In a weak mayor form of government, the mayor is there more like a figurehead. They might be equal to city council, but they're pretty limited in the things they can do. But they still are kind of they're separate, but they're mainly equal. And then in a strong mayor form of government, obviously the mayor is a little bit more strong. Sometimes it's like an executive position that is separate from the council. Sometimes they vote with the council, sometimes they don't. It's different city by city, but that's generally how it is. But when it comes to Houston, Houston actually has the strongest strong mayor form of government in the United States. The only other city that I've seen that comes close, and like you said, there might be others that are just nobody's paying attention, right. But Denver is very similar. And so in Houston, the way the mayor has power, it's multiple fronts. For one, of course, the mayor is a figurehead. They get to do press conferences. And even though, you know, and especially the city of Houston, it's the fourth biggest city in the United States. So they're doing international agreements, whether that's trade deals or sister city agreements with governments all around the world, really. So it's not like they're just talking about potholes and local infrastructure. Like they're doing bigger, much bigger things. But they like to, around election season, really focus on just that kind of like a boilerplate issues. Like, we're going to fix the roads and help with flooding. And that's like a place in this discussion. But they're, once they get in office, they do much bigger things and nobody's paying attention. So they have power in that way. But then also when it comes more specifically to the city government, the mayor, whether he or she, currently it's a man, Sylvester Turner, he gets to set the budget for each of the districts. So tomorrow when people go vote, they're going to vote for mayor of Houston and they're going to vote for 16 different council members. And each of these council members represent different districts of the city, right? So each district elects their person that's supposed to be the representative at city council. And you would think if it was a real representative, you know, government of some kind, that would mean the person you vote for, when you call them or email them, say, hey, so-and-so council member, I have this issue going on in my community. Can you please bring it to the council's attention and see what can get done? The next meeting, they say, hey, my people are calling about this. Let's introduce something and let's have a discussion about it. But in fact, that is not what happens at all. In Houston, the city council members have no power to introduce anything to the agenda on a weekly basis. So when they meet this Tuesday and Wednesday, for example, if they wanted to discuss crime in their neighborhood or whatever, or in the controversial side, fluoride in the water or 5G in the community, like I've tried to over the years, even if you had 5-10 council members who were saying, my people are concerned about fluoride in the water, flooding, crime, whatever, whatever, if the mayor, he or she says no, it doesn't get placed on the agenda. And that means it can't be voted on. There can't be any real discussion. And so, and that kind of sounds like such a simple thing, but I want people to understand, like, it's a big thing. It's a big way on the local level that they entrench power. Because the other thing is, when you want to come speak at city council, and you ask them, okay, what do you like to speak about? And you say fluoride or whatever, they're going to look at the weekly agenda, which again is set by the mayor. And if you're not an agenda item, well, they put you all the way at the end. So you're going to wait 2-4 hours on a Tuesday afternoon to speak. And when you get up there to speak, to say your little 2-3 minute speech that you've been waiting for all day, half the council members are gone. The mayor's gone. The other ones are just playing on their phones. It's a very defeating and disheartening feeling. And so changing this is something that I've been calling for. And I called for in 2019, as you said, and 2023, I was basically calling for not abolishing the mayor's office, but for making it as much of a kind of paper tiger as possible, for reducing the mayor's office power to making it more equal to the city council. We had a lot of big ideas, and this idea actually did catch on in 2019. And after that election, which I didn't win, a coalition of activist groups came together and they got 40,000 petition signatures and got this charter amendment passed. And it is now going to be on the ballot tomorrow. It's called Proposition A. And so when I got kicked off the ballot, I've been campaigning now for the last 2 months about vote yes on Prop A, because Prop A, if it passes, it will allow 3 council members to have the power to add items to the weekly agenda. It'll basically break that power hold, that stranglehold that the mayor of Houston has had for at least 4 decades. And it is my belief that once this passes, we will have a lot easier of a time than we did 10 years ago when I tried to get fluoride out of the water, because back then council members were willing to listen, but in the end they would always say, I can't do anything. My hands are tied. I can't even put this on the agenda, and the mayor doesn't want to talk about it. So then it's a dead end. So, you know, I say all that to say that this is something that I think if you do research in your local community and you start to understand the power that your mayor or, you know, whatever, whether it's mayor or some similar position on the town council level, understand what powers they have. Like, do your council members, your town council members have the power to introduce anything? If you were to call them and say, hey, I'd like to talk to you about this issue or that issue, or are they just powerless? And if they are powerless, and if the mayor or whoever's in that executive position is basically a dictator, which is what it's been like in Houston, then you might want to see what ways you have to try to remedy that situation. You know, and we just happen to be in a position here in Houston where this through the work of myself and plus all the volunteers who organized to get these signatures a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And I should note, they got this in 2021. The current mayor, who's on his way out, he illegally delayed this from being on the ballot until he was on the way out. This should have been on the ballot last year or the year before, but he pushed it off until the last minute because he's going to leave office by the time it passes. Wow. But the next mayor who comes in, which is more than likely going to be a Democratic career politician who's been in office for 50 years, at the very least, will have this power to introduce things to maybe push back on the local level. And again, when it comes to the bigger picture, this could be a way we stop Agenda 2030. This right. could be a way that we stop smart cities and traffic restriction zones by having the power to get the council members to actually represent us in some way. And so, you know, I'm definitely not somebody who thinks government is the answer or anything of that sort, but I do think local action is important. And in this case, it's very rare, I feel like, that you have a chance. I'm not voting for mayor even. There's nobody else I trust. So I'm just going to vote for Proposition A, because how often do you get a chance to actually shrink the local government a little bit and give the people a little more power?
Right. And we have to do it locally. And what's very scary, because I had to leave New York finally, it's a carcass. It's a cesspool. It's a dystopian hell of what it once was. And I grew up there. I loved it. I will never go back to New York City. And I'll tell you right now that this is a big problem. And I think people all over the country should be looking into the powers of their mayor, because you brought up smart cities and I saw it happen in New York too. And I'm sure all over this country. And these guys also have contract deals. They're going, like you said, the mayor, his sister cities, they're going to events all over the world to talk about things that should never be in America to begin with. But a lot of them already ceded their power to the globalist agenda way long ago, or they wouldn't have even been there. And then if you're city council members and you're that are supposed to be representing you are have no power, you have no voice at all. And people have to understand this capture of our nation, especially on the government level. And you're really, really good at breaking that down. You know, you talk a lot about the technocracy, and I think people don't understand what that means. What they're saying when we're talking about that they want a technocracy, a technocratic, totalitarian, globalist, you know, takeover, Agenda 2030 being that, along with all its spokes. So you talk a lot about this. I'm surprised that the people that created a lot of it at MIT are having you come to speak about it, but they are, and I think that's a great sign. So if you could just talk about what you're speaking about at MIT and kind of explain to people what we are talking about when we talk about this technocracy and what is the danger to all of us, and not just in America. America's kind of on the front lines for the rest of the world. If they can pull it off here, the rest of the world's got basically no chance of not having it happen.
I agree. And the, you know, the thing is, they're already testing it in other nations. There's other nations, small nations like Estonia. If you look them up, they're one of the first all digital nations that have already been kind of prepped for this. And then, of course, we've seen over the years, places like Switzerland and Sweden are already familiar with the chips in the hands to get into work and stuff. So there are some parts of Europe that have already accepted these agendas and not in the full, they might not see the full picture of where it's going, but they're like, oh yeah, I get into work. It's convenient. But yeah, when it comes to technocracy is a political movement that first emerged in the 1920s in the United States and Canada. And it was popular from 1920s to about mid-1950s. It was part of the broader progressive movement, but it was a little more specific in that the Howard Scott, who's one of the gentlemen who first promoted it, and a few other guys who founded Technocracy Inc., they were all involved at Columbia University studying out of the progressive roots of government managing, you know, our lives. They were thinking, well, how could this be applied when it comes to technology? You know, at that time, 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, people understood that there were going to be machines. We were starting to build cars, and they had this idea of what a computer would be, but we didn't have personal computers. Obviously, you had computers the size of walls. Right. Still, nonetheless, there were philosophers and kind of forward-thinking people who knew machines were going to shape our society. They didn't have the terms artificial intelligence yet, AI, but they knew machines could be used and we might be able to create a utopian society doing so. And so this was the kind of mindset of the technocrats, where they thought if they could have what Howard Scott called the technocrat king at the top of what he called the technate, which I call the technocratic state, is just this kind of massive operation, geographic area that they would really, the world, that they would micromanage through the machines. And the idea would be that the machines, or more currently the AI, the algorithm, would tell them this area of town needs this amount of food to be most productive and happy, et cetera. And so it would allocate and micromanage all resources. You know, we're talking about resource control, et cetera. But of course, this is promoted for the good of society. This would, you know, they would be able to make sure that there's no hunger, there's no starvation. And then a lot of people bought into the idea because, for one, the idea that they were promoting was, let's get rid of the politicians, let's get rid of the businessmen. And a lot of people like that. Like, yeah, hey, corporations, businessmen are ruining things. The Rockefellers, for example. Right. And yeah, government is screwing things up. So what else you got? Well, their idea was the technocrats or the experts. So the experts wielding the technological tools, the AI, the machines, would micromanage and run society. And the rest of us would kind of just be the workers who would be at the whim of the technocrat king and his advisors and such. And so this is really the vision that the technocrats had. And it, as I said, it sort of went underground for a little while. But in the 70s, you have a man named Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is a advisor to Obama, as well as nearly every single president during his kind of career. And until his death, he was also the guy responsible for helping start Al-Qaeda and arming the Afghans and just a lot of history there. Well, he wrote a book called The Technotronic Era, America Between Two Ages, that also kind of, he calls it technotronic instead of technocratic, but it's the same thing. And in his vision, he's even more explicit that there would be a world police state, that there would be, you know, they make it clear that that choice would have to go, individual choices. They want to be able to control prices and management. But again, it's all utopian. It's going to be for the benefit. And this is, of course, what we're hearing today in the name of climate change, that if we can allow these people to digitize our entire world and tokenize everything and put sensors on everything, the Internet of Things, the Internet of Bodies, the Internet of Humans, then they'll know where everything's at all times, how much money we're spending, what we're doing. And through that knowledge, they will be able to fulfill the technocrat dream of knowing, okay, this area of the world or the planet or the state or whatever needs this much resources. And, you know, there's too much carbon over here, so you guys can't drive this week. And just a totally, completely micromanaged society, of course, with AI at the top of it. And in the vision of the technocrats, they believe there'll be a technocrat king or his council at the top helping to run such things. So this is very much the, you know, whether people are familiar with the philosophy or not, you're familiar with the dictates of it. Because if you've heard the phrase, trust the experts, the last couple of years, that comes right from a technocratic mindset. I mean, this is our betters, the experts, the Bill Gates and the Elon Musks and the Bezos and the Fauci's of the world and the Peter Hoteses. They're so educated and smarter than us. We need to just wait for them to hand things down. And of course, we're moving into a world that's being promoted by the United Nations, the World Economic Forum. Everybody needs a digital ID card. We need to digitize everything. And so these two things kind of converging, the digitization of our world, the technocratic philosophy coming back in full swing, I think it's becoming clear that this is really what it's about. And now they have made it even more clear in the recent months and really the last couple of years that climate change is now a big part of where things are going. Of course, they might play the pandemic card again if it's useful for them. But for the most part, climate change is becoming the kind of central face of this technocratic tyranny.
Hey guys, thank you for watching the show. I just want to remind you yet again that we really need to be very cautious of what is going on with the economy, both here and internationally. Most of us know that the BRICS nations are looking for a gold-backed currency to dethrone the dollar being the world reserve currency. They have an event coming up on August 22nd. The BRICS nations are all going. There are also 13 other nations that would like to join the BRICS nations. And this is not something to not pay attention to. We have to make sure that you protect your savings. And that is why I have chosen Beverly Hills Precious Metals. That is where I have gotten my gold and silver. I leave it in a depository. I know it's there. I've replaced it with my savings I've put there to make sure that I weather the storm no matter what, be it the central bank digital currency, the BRICS nations, the dollar goes into collapse, whatever may happen. I know 401k, IRA, backed by gold, as well as having my savings, at least an amount of my savings in gold, in the depository or sent to you at home, is the best way to make sure you maintain peace of mind and make sure that your savings and everything that you've earned is safe no matter what comes. We will get through this. All is not lost. America will return to greatness as it always has been. But between now and then, we have to be very smart and very cognizant of what's going on. So please go to Mel K Gold, or go to the MelKShow.com partners page and go to Beverly Hills Precious Metals. And my friend Andrew will take care of you. He's got a great team.
Gold is the way to go right now. And I know that no matter what, I'm safe. So please do that for yourselves. We really care about you here. You're more like family and friends. And I hear from all of you a lot. So I just want to make sure that you guys are doing something proactive to be prepared. All will be well, but take care of yourself now. Being prepared is always a good thing.
And Brzezinski, also a partner with Kissinger and Rockefeller in the UN, in the Trilateral Commission, in the CFR, in the Club of Rome. I mean, the group is so obvious. Like, if you just look at it, you can see it. And the great part, Derek, too, is that I always say to people, just go to their own websites. Look at any of the octopus of global control. You know, Charlie Robinson has termed it in his book. It's like, look at any of these tentacles of these people that are obviously all meeting around the world because they're a super class, according to them. And they will decide for the rest of us. I call them the global billionaire oligarchy and their international banking cartel, you know, and they're wreaking havoc on the planet. And what they're also doing is, I think, everything that's going on is about Agenda 2030. And that a lot of people don't realize in America that Barack Obama, he was not first, but Barack Obama signed on to Agenda 2030 in 2015 and the 17 Sustainable Development Goals. And what you're talking about is really important for people to understand. And Derek's, there's so much stuff on his website to really get through this. But everything that they're saying, you have to then ask, who's enforcing this? You know, if they're saying there's no global governance, well, they're now proposing an international climate tax. Who's taking that tax? You know, who's behind the global digital ID? All you have to do is look at each one of these things and think, well, where's the enforcement mechanism? And they'll say, oh, no, they're just suggestions. No, they're not. That's not what their plan is. And to me, I think NATO is even their military, if you want to ask me. But I, at this point, they can hide. But too many people are on to them. So now, as far as what you said about AI. So, you know, you've seen, everyone's seen on my show, especially like Harari and other people talking about, well, you know, free will's over, humans are hackable. It's going to be who trains the algorithm will be running the world, basically, AI, all of this. Well, last week, I think a lot of people talk about Gates, but I think one of the most dangerous of the globalist billionaire oligarchs that run America is Eric Schmidt. And he, I know he's been behind the scenes with the new science and technology position on the executive level with the O'Biden regime. And then he's been back there with Schmidt Futures. It was exposed on Last American Vagabond. All of the Schmidt Future Fellows that are in the Joe Biden regime behind the scenes in science and technology. He's been behind a lot of Department of Defense AI contracting lately. And he wrote a book with Henry Kissinger, the New World Order original architect, in my opinion. Also, he was behind Google China and the track and trace and surveillance there. Well, I just saw the Biden regime put out an AI executive order. I'm sure you saw it too. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking, A, Eric Schmidt wrote this. And then Obama comes out and he's like, yeah, you know, I really helped with the AI executive order. That executive order is very dangerous. Did you take a look at it? And to me, it looks like it's everything that you're talking about, but in a dictate. That like the government's going to be running this. Scarily enough, even more than that, it appears that Eric Schmidt will be running it. So what are your thoughts on this executive order?
Yeah, I'm actually working on an article right now that'll come out this week about this. And I'm glad you're bringing it up because Eric Schmidt is somebody who, since he's kind of gone a little bit more in the background, he's not as public. He's not one of these people who are on, you know, Twitter making public statements for the most part. He's kind of in working with the, and I love O'Biden, by the way, working with the administration. And too many people aren't really watching it. And as with previous statements about AI, I believe what this one is doing is just another step. And yes, regulation, kind of talking about regulation, which I think there is a real argument for potentially trying to regulate AI. But of course, can we trust these people? Of course, we can't trust these people to regulate these products, you know. But in a real world where we had people taking care of us, like, yes, there is a realistic threat of AI that we need to talk about. Unfortunately, these aren't going to be the people who are going to look out for our needs. But what I've seen in previous statements, and for example, when what's the gentleman with WorldCoin? I can't remember his name right now. The guy who created WorldCoin, which he was speaking to Congress recently. He was partners with Elon Musk in an AI company
A while back.
And
is it
Sam Altman? And right. he was talking about how he was also calling for AI, and I wrote an article about this when he was testifying in front of Congress. And coincidentally, right after he testified to Congress, he went to the Bilderberg Group. But he is calling for regulation, but he's doing so in a way that what it seems like, what I believe they're working on, is actually trying to push out open source AI. And I have a lot of friends who are technologists who say that there is potential for, you know, just like all technology is a tool, AI is something that terrifies me. And personally, I haven't played with any of the toys that are out yet. I just like, I'm not ready for it yet. Right. But there are people like my friend, Ramiro Romani, who runs takebackourtech.org, who's a technologist who really tries to educate people on how to be private when they're using these tools. And he says that really, this is going to push out open source artificial intelligence. And instead, it's going to, you know, create rules that will favor Google, Apple, all the usual players, and then essentially make it really difficult for, let's just say, some kid in his garage who can come up with an AI program that can solve the world's problems or something, to be able to put that out there without being overregulated, taxed, et cetera, et cetera. And instead, of course, will favor and empower further these big tech corporations with their versions of AI, right? So they get to play like, yeah, we're doing something that's going to regulate to help protect you. But in reality, it's going to be just another kind of government con job that empowers them more and disempowers the people. So, I mean, that's what I think is coming out of this. And then one of the things you said a moment ago, I wanted to just mention this because right before our interview, I filmed an interview with a gentleman named Jacob Nordangård. He's from Sweden. And I encourage people to check out the interview when it comes out, or maybe you should talk to him, Mel. I think he'd be a great guest.
Yeah, I'd love to.
He put out this lecture recently. He's a PhD, you know, educated guy. And he's telling me how he's just an outcast in his country. They pretty much just try to ignore him now because they can't debunk his research. And the reason I interviewed him is because he's one of the only other people I've seen that is talking about this UN effort and World Economic Forum effort that is going on right now, but is really going to take place next year, 2024. It's called the Summit of the Future, and it's taking place next year. And at the Summit of the Future, they're claiming that the world leaders are going to sign the Pact for the Future. And I believe this is going to be the world government like document. I think like all the pieces have been putting in place, and Jakob does a great job kind of outlining like, I mean, there's so many meetings, it's hard to keep up. Like you got the G20, the BRICS and all that, but all these meetings, they've been putting the places and the pieces in place, including the pandemic preparedness. And there's another thing that the UN has talked about, the declaration of planetary emergency. So when they have these pieces in place, all they have to do is say, oh, it's a planetary emergency because of climate change, pandemic, et cetera, right, et cetera. And then all that infrastructure that they've put in place for this world government will go live. Like, and so, you know, who is doing this or where? Like, I want people to pay attention to that. Look up the Summit for the Future. Look up the Pact for the Future. I'll be doing an article on that pretty soon for the Last American Vagabond, because I think we need more eyes and attention on that. You know, we just had the in September in New York, the Sustainable Development Goals Summit was in New York City. And most people didn't even know it happened, but it's each of these meetings. And I know they're hard to keep up with. I struggle to keep up with them.
I do it too. I covered that meeting in New York. They re-entered the Clinton Global Initiative during it. Nobody even talked about it. And I'm like, what?
That was a busy week. There was so much going on then. And the thing is, you've got like all these acronyms and this is what I was saying to Jakob too. You got the advisory board on this thing. It's I get it. Like it's overwhelming, but this is how they operate. They put it all out in the open, and it's only for those who can keep up and who can decipher through their BS language to see the truth of it. And so that SDG summit, though, they're claiming, you know, we're falling behind our sustainable development goals. We need to recommit. Now, of course, I think that's true, that they know that most of the world's either not paying attention or hasn't really bought into it. Now they've got some of the younger generation gluing themselves to things and convinced that the world's about to end and stuff. And it's sad because, you know, I even heard my little, she just turned 13, my 13-year-old niece, say something about like, it was just like an apocalyptic statement. And I know she didn't just come up with it herself. And I told her, I said, baby, everything's okay. The world's not going to end. Like things are crazy in the world. That's fine. But like, and I could just tell it was something she must've heard at school or something. But the point is like, they're putting out their proclamations of like, the world's going to get bad and we're not doing enough. And so that's what they're trying to do, is say, in order to really do this at the Summit for the Future, we're going to have to, you know, do this new pact where we all agree and give ourselves all kind of fun powers. And that'll be kind of combined with what's going on with the World Health Organization and the pandemic treaty. But it's something big that I think people need to pay attention to.
And I think that it's also something. Yeah, I think like we're so divided. I agree with you 100%. I actually did a show on the Summit of the Futures and the UN Our Common Agenda. And me and Alex Newman read it. And we're just sitting like, who do these people think they are? They have no authority. And without us, they have nothing. And the people keep playing along. And like you're talking about, they use our emotion, our empathy, our compassion, our, you know, God-given everything against us. And act like, you know, we're going to help these developing nations that never develop. They steal the resources. Another thing I want to add to this and ask you about it, because I agree that that's part of it, because there's also the natural asset class that they have proposed, Bloomberg and them. That's, I think, a part of this. They're having their COP28 upcoming with inclusive capitalism, which is really the end of free markets and like total. So what they're doing right now, it appears to me, and this Summit of the Futures, I think too, is the coming out party for, guess what? You're all into our global governance. But let's talk about that natural asset class for a second, because I know you've covered this too. It appears to me what they're saying, you know, like you follow it too. It's funny, the Council of Foreign Relations put out an article. It's probably gone. Everything's 404 these days that you need to look at. But it was like, the conference, the world conferences you should know about. And it was like 20, I was like, oh, great. They're giving us the map of where they go. But so they announced this thing. It was at COP 26 or 27. Now they're coming back with another one. Of course, the inclusive capitalism is run by Linda Rothschild and the Pope somehow. And they're coming out with that. And then Obama mentioned it the other day. And I'm thinking, oh, inclusive capitalism. So they're just coming out with it. The other thing is this natural asset class. Where they're saying that they basically want to turn all natural resources on the planet into a new stock market that they control. And then on the side of that, they also, you know, this goes with also the climate trace and all of that. So what are they saying when they talk about that they would like to, and I guess this is with the 30-30 agenda, they're basically saying that everything on planet Earth, including us humans, that they're going to own. That's what it sounds like.
I think that's what it really comes down to. I mean, we're seeing a combination of things. We're seeing the commodification of all nature. We're seeing the tokenization of all nature. And some of that goes into some of the kind of more nefarious blockchain projects that the World Economic Forum and the UN are connected to. And yes, they're going to, and there's also, you can find plenty of papers from the UN and the World Economic Forum talking about a nature-based economy. And it's the usual tactics of using buzzwords and lingo and things that pull at your heartstrings. Like when you hear nature-based economy, I don't even really know what that means, but I guess it kind of sounds cool. It's like nature. Yeah, I like nature economy. Like maybe that's good. But what it's really about, and you kind of touched on it, is owning everything. And they're going to sell it like, if we have sensors on everything, if we can plot and map out the entire planet, then we can know where there's too much carbon and where there's polluters over here. And we can keep you safe. Of course, it's always about keeping us safe and, secure and all that. But that's really how they're going to sell it, is that this is part of the smart city agenda that they've been talking about for years as well, is by putting sensors in the street, they can monitor traffic patterns and then they can know how to better adjust the lights so that they can prevent cars from idling, these kind of things. And that's how they sell it to that climate change audience, is like, look, it's going to be good for you. We're going to put digital billboards everywhere, sensors on everything. Everything will be watching and listening to you all the time. And we'll be able to use that data to create safer streets, more inclusive streets. And I see this on the local level, even at the election. Like, we want streets with bike paths and walk paths and stuff that, generally speaking, yeah, I think that's a good idea. But I also know what the bigger picture is of what they're trying to do. You see them subtly bringing in like, yeah, we need streets that are where there's only one lane for a car and there's three lanes for bike or walk path or whatever. Like, so they're not making it illegal to drive, but they're socially engineering, making it difficult and making it annoying and making it like, okay, well, why would I even bother? I'll just ride the bus or whatever. And eventually you don't even have the freedom to do it, right? That's how this works, is they kind of make things available. They talk about it from a positive perspective and it, you know, they start making changes and it's optional. It's voluntary in the beginning. And then eventually you lose your rights altogether. And so what we're witnessing is using the climate change narrative, using people's love for nature and love for the planet, which I think most of us have. Like, we want to, you know, live in a beautiful place and have streams and that we can play in and all those wonderful things that we generally agree on, but they're using that kind of, I guess, desire and that emotional desire to manipulate and bring in their agenda. So people need to understand that. I mean, we are going to see more talk of a nature-based economy, of the tokenization of nature, And what you were discussing there, being able to catalog all resources, everything is absolutely a part of it. And it's only once they have cataloged everything on the planet will they feel content that they can then build the technocratic system that I was describing, because you can't micromanage all resources till you know everything that you have available, right? And so that means human resources, human capital, and apparently they think there's a little bit too much of human resources right now.
Yes, they do think that, it seems. Yeah, but all this is really very serious, and people have to understand, because here's the thing that's bothering me, and you know, this is a whole nother, we're going to do a whole nother show on the finders and the trafficking and what's going on with humanity on that level, which people should really, really understand about the border and all that. So we'll cover that a different time. But I do want to ask you what I think is going on to a certain extent. I think it's all about Agenda 2030. I think these 17 Sustainable Development Goals are exactly what you're saying. They're selling it as this is good for you, all of that. But I do believe that they feel that they are losing ground, especially with the overt, insane misinformation, disinformation narrative thing coming from the very top, from all these places. And like I say to people, Derek, a lot, when people say anything like this is, you know, they can't really see it anymore after COVID, that it's not lockstep global. But go to their own websites. If you go to any of their websites, which includes the International Banking Cartel, so that's the Bank of International Settlements folks, it's IMF, World Bank, and then underneath of it, there's different layers. You know, there's the NGOs, Rockefeller, Open Society, all them. But then there's also all the UN folks, from UNESCO to World Health Organization, WEF, any of them. You go and you just search global governance, and it's going to tell you exactly what they're saying. You can search, you know, technocratic, whatever. You can search, you know, Agenda 2030. Why does everyone have an Agenda 2030, including the Vatican, NATO, and CERN? I mean, so it's like you can do your own investigation and prove it to yourself. But what I think right now, we're watching what's going on in Israel, and I've stayed out of this argument because I firmly believe that this is part of that. And I think that they have people marching in the streets calling for a ceasefire. And I don't know if people understand that they're calling for a ceasefire that the people that are funding both sides will never allow, in my opinion. And I have watched this thing, and I think that a big part of the Agenda 2030 is that people don't understand that the people that are behind this are of no nation. They have no allegiance to any nation. They have no allegiance to any people. When I talk about the capture of America by the globalist billionaire oligarchy, I mean just ours. I think they're in every single country. They're at the very top. They go to these meetings. And when I'm looking at what's going on in the world, and then I look at the Belt and Road Initiative map, the real map that they've put together, and then I look at, you know, what's going on over here and who's rebuilding Ukraine. They need $600 billion to rebuild Ukraine, and it's being led. And you said at the UN thing, they pull in the Clinton Global Initiative and 130 NGOs to help rebuild Ukraine. $600 billion, BlackRock and CCP involved. And I'm looking at what's going on in Israel, and I think that it's about the land. I don't know what you think, and I'm curious, and I don't think these people care. I call them the Fourth Reich, but I get like put on ADL's list, which it has nothing to do with that. I'm just saying, if you look at the goals of the Third Reich that actually were the goals that they never got close to achieving, and you look at what they're doing now, it's pretty similar. But what I'm asking you is, I think we're missing the real enemy here. The enemy to humanity, what is really going on. I think it's the same globalist billionaire oligarchy and their international banking cartel partners that are fueling all of this, including the open borders, what happened in Ukraine, what's happening in Israel. I'm curious what you think, because I keep seeing people picking sides and marching in the streets and stuff. And I think that the people that benefit the most from all of this are having champagne in Switzerland right now, thinking it's going to make it.
Oh, I agree 100%. You know, I stand in solidarity with the innocent Israeli people, the innocent Palestinians.
Me too.
Just like I stand in solidarity with the innocent Ukrainians and Russians caught in the bullshit of war. You know, I mean, I tend to feel like we would have much more in common with those people than the people sipping the champagne, or the Netanyahu's and the Putins and the other people making the decisions. Like, so I think that's the worst part, is the media, and especially, I mean, we're dealing with a conflict that is not only thousands of years old in terms of like the broader picture, not just since World War II, religious, historical conflict that we're not going to solve in one podcast, and that nobody's got the perfect answer for. And so I think that, unfortunately, just like the internet, everybody's got a hot take. I haven't put out a single report or really anything other than a few tweets on the situation, just because because of those things, because I know it's an emotionally charged subject. But if I do, and I'm sure I will, it would be to emphasize what you were saying there, is that this is just another part of what the World Economic Forum has been calling the polycrisis. They want us to be stuck in this state of pandemics and climate change, and now it's war in Ukraine, it's this, and it's the inflation. Like, they have been predicting and saying this, and they're all, you can go search polycrisis on weforum.org right now, and you're going to see them saying we are in the polycrisis now. And I just think that this is all a symptom of that. So it's easy for, and in so many ways, it does feel scripted. That's not to say that nobody's died on either side, because I believe that there are real deaths happening. But I mean, from one moment we're talking about, you know, we're arguing over Ukraine or whatever the heck it was before, and then October 7th happens, and then this is the new thing, right? And so here we are 3 weeks later, almost a month later, it's still the thing. So if you're just allowing them to drive your narrative, and if for content creators and journalists, if you're just talking about what they want you to talk about, they're winning still. You might be on Rumble or Odyssey or some other place, but they're still winning. They're still up here in your head dictating your thought process. Now, you might have your own thoughts and you might be counter to them. I'm not saying don't talk about anything they don't ever talk about, but I'm just saying if we're just reactionary, right? Like, if you weren't talking about the Israeli-Palestine conflict before October 7th and now you are, they're in control of your thought process. And you are literally allowing them to dictate. And that could be distracting you from other issues, as always something's going on. Or it could just be the simple case that you are allowing them to get you focused on what they want you to focus on. And there's some reason that I don't think we're going to figure out right this moment that they want us to focus on that. I do think that, again, the religious aspect plays in this. We do have insane people, both in the U.S. government and other parts of the world, who are trying to make the Bible come true and who want, like, what they believe is biblical prophecy to come true. And if that means they have to launch a war to try to start it, they might be willing to do that, you know. And then there's another part of my brain that I kind of always reserve space for this, like, sit back and wait, you know, because again, real people are being harmed. Real people's lives are being destroyed. I mean, the videos, I haven't really watched more than just 30 seconds because I just don't have the bandwidth for it right now. Like, I know things are fucked up. I know it's bad. I've seen it. I know it. Like, and I'm praying for it. That's what I can do right now, you know, praying for everybody. But beyond that, like, I'm just kind of tuned out. But I just know that there is a bigger agenda at play, whether that's to push us to World War III, or this is that space that I always reserve in my mind. If this is all just about pumping up fear, and yes, there are real casualties, and yes, there are real people being harmed, but are we really on the brink of World War III? I don't necessarily know. I mean, based on past events, I would say that that's a threat they want us to think constantly. Right. In my view, these people are working together a lot more coordinated than they are in front of the screens. I don't really buy the narrative in front of the TV. I don't buy the storyline. You know, I think that, like you said, they're sitting back, sipping champagne. Maybe not every single leader, but at some level, there is an awareness with the Kissingers and the other power players of the world that these are just their pawn pieces. You know, this isn't a real game for them. It's a real game. It's life and death for us, but for them, it's just moving pieces on a board.
Yeah, I think they're using the religious stuff and even the stuff you're talking about, the doomsday stuff, the Book of Revelations, but also the Israeli, the Jewish, all of it. I believe that these people, they do not care at all about any of us, that this is a lot of narrative driving. This is a lot of dividing the people, because what you're saying, I think it's order out of chaos, and it's they're causing as much chaos so that we, humanity, sacrifice our freedom, our prosperity, our liberty, our potential, everything in the name of please just save us. If we need to sign on to Agenda 2030 and those 17 sustainable development goals are going to stop this chaos, we're in. And that's what I think is going on. And it's hard to say that because I feel the same way too. I feel for these people, but I also look at the land and how important that land is where Israel resides. Like, I did a whole show on the land. This land has been debated about way before 1947 or any of that. No. This has been going on from the beginning of time. That land is a very, very strategic, important piece of land as well. So if you are going to be running the world, you know, there's a strategy there. And I looked, I'm not saying that it's that, but I did look at, you know, they happen to be having a big Belt and Road Initiative event with Putin and Xi on October 7th. And I'm not saying that they were there. Also, Netanyahu and Abbas both met with Xi multiple times. And, you know, my feeling is a lot of people say this thing and in one way, but what I say is I don't think they're after America. I know they're destroying America from within. I see the Clara Piven. I see the destroyed our military. I see the border. I see our inner cities, no laws, all this nonsense. But I really think they're not after America. They want to destroy America, remove us from the chessboard, and then they want the world. And America's kind of in the way. And that's why a lot of the work you do is really important, because the American people need to realize that standing up and saving America, freedom first, get out off your team, off your oppressive team, off your retarded, like ridiculous left and right, fake Republican paradigm, the Democrat paradigm, they're all the same. But we have to understand America is kind of standing in the way, I believe, of a very or way worse situation, which is to me, when I'm looking at, you know, you and I are always looking for who are they, and you follow the money. Well, what I'm seeing and what I saw when I was watching Xi and Putin and 130 other leaders were on October 7th talking about the BRICS and the Belt and Road Initiative. I see all these people that want to rule the one world government, the new world order. And a lot of people think that, you know, Xi and Putin and they're fighting against the bankers. I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think that the globalist billionaire oligarchy running America are all in with them. And, you know, and all the crew that you follow, the Bilderberg and the Davos and all these people. But here's the crazy part to me. When America. And their dream is removed, okay, then you're telling me that the Muslim Brotherhood is going to cede to the Chinese Communist Party and just be like, okay, you guys run it. Or like the Davos and the Crown and that crew is going to be like, no, you guys go ahead. We'll just follow you. No. If this is moved out and the people of the planet don't realize what is going on, the hell on earth that will continue till the planet blows up while these people fight for who's going to run this new technocracy totalitarian thing is far more dangerous. And that's why I think we really have to come to a call to action as humans and humanity and realize we actually are all on the same team. At least the masses of us are, if we could just break through and kind of understand what is going on.
Absolutely. I think that's a great, you know, a great encapsulation of what we're dealing with. And it's surprising to me that there are so many people who do fall for the China good, Russia good kind of narrative. But, you know, there's still, I think, and this is part of why I talk about the conscious resistance, kind of like constantly working on your own self-awareness and, you know, self-personal knowledge, because I think that it's a lack of self-awareness and self-knowledge that has people falling into another trap of still looking for a savior and thinking like, okay, well, look, I know things are bad with this part of the people, but what about Putin? Surely maybe he's a better option, or maybe, you know, we'll trust the Chinese, or maybe, you know, it's somebody else, or Trump's going to come back and save the day. Or like you said, and I think it's also a reality check for many people to understand that while these people, I do think, align more closely with each other than either of us, like the average person on the street, you're going to see a Xi, a Putin, you know, Modi, any of these world leaders sit down with each other before they would sit down with one of the regular folk, right? So even though they have their differences, and I don't think they're constantly united on every single thing and they move in lockstep on every single thing, right, at the end of the day, they will align together if it means aligning against the people of their individual nations that they are controlling, or the people of the world. And like you point to the Muslim Brotherhood and other groups, I think that we are probably in the midst of a kind of a subtle conflict, or, you know, civil war between the various factions that are vying for control of the new world order, you know, because there's billionaires and there's people in government and there's philanthropists like Bill Gates and others. But yeah, they don't always align on every single path. But again, they would be aligned with each other much closer than they would with the average person. So, you know, maybe not always together sitting in a room holding hands, but at the end of the day, they're pragmatic people. If that means, okay, I'll partner with him for a little bit to get this done, to advance the agenda, that's what they're going to do. And so, you know, don't trust the Putins or the Chinese government or any of them, or think that because they are fighting against the dollar, or at least on the surface, that's what we're being shown, which again, could be part of a real kind of economic battle, but that doesn't mean that they're on our side per se. Like, they look to China, look to Russia, look what their nations are already like, look the way they run things. You don't have to, just because people say some nice things against New World Order or whatever, doesn't mean that they are on our team or on our side. Like you said, I'm on Team Humanity, and I'm willing to work with anybody who gets that. If you believe in individual liberty and bodily autonomy, we probably agree on most things. And where we don't, I bet we can put that aside and focus on the bigger picture, because it's crunch time. The summit for the future, the pact for the future, all these things are coming and happening right now. And so they're really, as you said earlier, Mel, it's kind of like the unveiling, the welcome here. It's out in the open now. I think we're getting really close to that moment.
Yeah, you know, when I saw the thing in New York with the UN and they did the drones in the sky above the carcass that was New York City, and then the Clintons come out, and I'm like, oh my, it was like Pan Am in Hunger Games when you're walking to give your children to the whatever they're called, the ones that they're going to sacrifice, and it's a big festival, and I'm like, oh my God, we are watching them actually live out their Hunger Games fantasy in front of our faces. Derek Brose, I've kept you a long time. One last thing before you go. You and a friend confronted Hillary Clinton in front of the world, and nobody's ever seen this before. And I just wanted you to tell people real quick what happened there. And I know my whole audience will be like, wow, that's awesome. And you can go, and then I will tell them where to find you so they can go take a look. So tell me just real quick about that story.
Yeah. So, I mean, this was part of the campaigns. As I mentioned, I've still just been going to events. Well, one of the other main candidates, Sheila Jackson Lee, who's been a career Democratic politician for about 35 years, constantly voted the worst congresswoman to work for. She brought Hillary Clinton to Houston to come vote for or to come endorse her and try to pump up the votes against the other career politician. And so I decided, all right, I'm going to show up. And if I get a chance, try to question. So I actually went there by myself and ran into the gentleman who got dragged out. His name's Alex Rosen. And he runs a channel on Rumble called Predator Poachers, where his kind of day job, normal content, is catching child predators. And he's helped in the arrest of hundreds of people. It's really some fascinating and sick and disturbing work that he's involved in. But so he does that. And I think that's really great. And then outside of that, he's also kind of controversial just because he's a little bit of a troll, which sometimes is necessary, right? And so I happened to look over and see that he was there. I've interviewed him before at a previous event. He got choked by somebody, so I interviewed him there. And he was at this Hillary Clinton event wearing a shirt that said, you know, F you, pride, if you don't like it, stay the hell home. And then a hat that said, I'm autistic, please talk slowly. And then a super tight face mask and some shorts that were like wedged up his butt crack. It was quite a scene, but nobody bothered him. He blended in, I guess. And I kind of came over to him. I told him, I said, hey, I know. Hey, what's up, man? You're going to do your thing. I'm going to be over there filming. I'm trying to get a question too. And I just happened to be in the right spot. I knew that he was eventually going to stand up. And once Hillary started talking, he shouted out, hey, Hillary, why is your husband visited Epstein Island 26 times? Which, to be correct, you know, he's flown on the planes. I don't know if we have the evidence that he's been there. Yeah. But the point is, he was trying to generate conversation. He got about half of that out before the crowd just erupted. And honestly, this is this video should be studied for how cult-like some people are when it comes to the political game. And I would say people on the left and the right can be just as guilty as this kind of behavior, because they just, as soon as somebody said something that they perceived as negative, I guarantee you half of them didn't even hear what he said because it was just such a quick moment. They just knew protester, heckler, whatever, get him. And it was just like all heck erupted and everybody swarmed around him. And I just happened to be right there to document the whole thing. And it was actually pretty violent. I mean, you can see they slam him to the ground, rip his shirt off. And, you know, he's kind of laughing and having a fun time at it. He got like a great screen cap from my video of him giving a thumbs up while being dragged out. Like I said, the disturbing part of it is just like how the crowd, and this is like, I live in Houston. These are people that live in the city I live in, and they just turn into animals within moments, just like, drag them out. And I'm filming because I wanted to document in case he did get injured, but I'm also like, hey, is this necessary? That, you know, you can hear, that's me saying that in the video, saying, is this necessary? Are you guys just like serious? You know, eventually they just kind of looked at me and kept doing what they're doing. Nobody, you know, really stomped on him, thankfully, but they just dragged him all the way out of the hallway, gave him a chance, and then just kind of kicked him out of the building. The Secret Service bothered him. But the video has definitely gone into the millions of views on his channel. And I wrote an article about it just this week for The Last American Vagabond, kind of just reflecting on the situation and how I think it's very important that we continue to confront powerful people, whether that's doctors like Hotez or Hillary Clinton's and the others like that of the world. And this is a tradition that I used to see a lot more of when I was first starting to get involved in the 2010s that I don't think happens as much when actually I feel like we have even more criminals around now and probably need more confrontations than ever, you know? So
yeah, me too. I used to see you and Luke from We Are Change. You used to go right up to Kissinger's face and even Tim Pool back in the day. So, you know, we don't have that. And that's a shame. And I there should be more. It's like that cog in the wheel. If everyone's guilty, nobody's guilty. And that's how they keep it running along. Nobody ever is called out, and you do that, and you do it all the time. And I just wanted people to really get, we're doing another show on something totally different because he's done so much great work, but it's so important, your work, and you're such an inspiration to me and to so many other people. Can you tell everyone how to follow you again, where to find you? And on his website, there are so many that he's this whole thing on freedom cells. That's brilliant. He's got all kinds of stuff. His conscious resistance is a must for anyone that is really interested in saving this country and honestly fighting for humanity on almost every level that we're under attack. So Derek Bros, go ahead.
I appreciate the time again, Mel. Thank you. My main website is theconsciousresistance.com. As you mentioned, that's where my documentaries are at. You can watch them for free. You can download my books. You can see all of my presentations from the last 10 years. We tried to make it easy to find because I have a decade worth of content by category. So you can look up Epstein, 5G, COVID, et cetera, and dive in. If you want to follow my lawsuit and what I'm going to be doing with that, derekbros.com, just my full name is kind of the main place for that. And when you go there, you'll see the latest blog post. I have a fundraiser there we're doing. If you can contribute anything to our legal fund, my lawyer has estimated this is going to cost us about $15,000 to $20,000 to do. So far, we've raised about $6,000 of today. So we're doing pretty good. And I appreciate everybody who's contributed. If you got $5, $10 bucks or whatever, this is probably going to take the next year to year and a half of my life. And we're going to take it as far as we can. If we have the funds, ideally, this would go all the way to the Supreme Court and overturn this bad law. And like I said, help some people out. So you can check that out at derekbros.com. And yeah, feel free to reach out to me. I'm always happy to talk with people or just connect with other people who are doing good things.
Great. You are amazing. And I will be here all the way. I'd love to see it go to the Supreme Court. So if you can help out, Derek, this is a law that needs to change and his work needs to be supported. And I really wanted you to be in it more than anything because I wanted you up there asking real questions. So thank you for doing everything you do. I will see you again soon. And all your links are below. And thank you. I'll see you next time.
Thank you, Mel. See you soon.
The narrative is falling apart, but as it does, there's so much of this fraudulent disinformation, misinformation, censorship coming from the globalists. And what we need to do is be focused on the facts, cut through everything, be discerning, and get it first and foremost out there to everyone. It is important that you know what is going on. Censorship is getting nuts. You guys know it. There's accounts all over the place that are fake, that are not me. I know you guys send me emails and I really appreciate it. And you report it and it's on Telegram and Instagram and Twitter and they're not me. So I'm super excited to announce We the People with Mel K. Be the first to join. It's a VIP community, just you and me behind a paywall, no trolls, no nothing. We get to know each other. I will give you the facts first. I break a lot of stories a long time before other people. We can talk about past, present, future, history, what we're doing now, solutions for going forward, what 2024 is gonna look like. I'm going to do breaking news, do a lot of deep dives. I'm going to bring that information to you guys first in a live Q&A every week. So please click the link below and join me over there. We are going to create a community that is censorship proof. It's cancel proof. It's truth. It's transparency. It's on the road to God, country, justice, everything that we want in one place. This is the most incredible, amazing time to be alive. As hard as it seems and as difficult as the battle has been for you guys and definitely for me, all I know is that we all are part of the solution. We are all involved and invested, and you guys have the passion that I have. So let's join together on live Q&As once a week with me, Mel K, we the people of the United States, taking back this nation. This is so exciting, guys. I've been dying to do this, and we finally got the technology right. So please join me. Click the link below. Can't wait to get started. Hi. Hi guys, you know, for months and months, me and Mike Al have been talking about the water supply, what is in there. There are pharmaceuticals in the water supply. There are all these chemicals, lots of pollution. We've had all these natural disasters that leave our water not nearly as clean and certainly not as God intended. We know how important water is for our health. So we have been on a mission to try to find the best alternative to the water that is out there, including bottled water, which of course, we did a whole show on everything that's in bottled water, which is almost as shocking as what's in our natural water now. So we found the best partner we could in Healthy Hydrogen. This is a portable bottle that I use all the time, but also there are many options over there. You can get a full house system. You can get a tabletop system. You can get for your shower, for your office and business. They have so many great options. If you go to themelkshow.com, we have partnered with them. So it's on our partners page, Healthy Hydrogen. I am telling you right now, the difference in this water and what it will do to your health in general is incredible. If you have inflammation, your immune system has problems, anything that you are thinking you don't know the solution for, this could be the game changer. We've been looking for the missing piece, and I believe the missing piece is the water. We are so excited. They have so much science backing all of their products. They have been tested by all different groups out there that do this for a living and look at water really in depth. We have the hydrogen aspect, which is truly fascinating. Nothing is more important than water. We all know that. So make sure you're putting the best water in your body. And I assure you, this is a true, true game changer that you will see right away and will improve your health and your family's health going forward. Go check out the Mel Kay Show partners page, Healthy Hydrogen, and get your health back from the inside out, starting with God's great water. We will see you soon. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the show.